Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the webcast to discuss Tesla pending acquisition of SolarCity. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the conference, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. I will now introduce you for your host for today's conference, Mr. Jeff Evanson. You may now begin.
Thank you, Donovan, and good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to our call to discuss the Tesla and SolarCity blog that we posted to our website today. Today from Tesla, we have Elon Musk and Jason Wheeler, and from SolarCity, we have Lyndon and Peter Rive. We're going to start this call directly with Q&A based upon the blog post that we posted. So please press star one now on your phones to enter the queue. And our forward-looking statement here is, during our call, we will discuss our business outlook and make forward-looking statements. These are based on our predictions and expectations as of today. Actual events or results could differ materially due to a number of risks and uncertainties, including those mentioned in our most recent filings with the SEC. All right, Donovan, why don't we go to the first question, please?
Okay, and our first question comes from Rod Lach of Deutsche Bank. Your line is now open.
Thanks. I was hoping to ask two clarifications. One is on your comment about $500 million cash contributed from SolarCity to Tesla's balance sheet over the next 3 years. Are you referring to free cash flow over the next three-year period? What exactly was assumed there? And also, if you can, just clarify the comment you made about the recurring cash flows. If you can just remind us what, as of September, the present value was of those recurring cash flows, and what is the current sensitivity to the discount rate assumptions?
So this is Lyndon. The first part of the question, the $500 million that we mentioned there, that's our forecast. That does not include any of the synergies. It's just our direct forecast that was in the S-4. That is essentially a cash generation. Free cash flow, however, when you're looking at GAAP and lease accounting, is a term that doesn't quite apply there. So it would just be straight off cash generation from the business. The
bank balance, $500 million bigger.
Exactly, the bank balance is $500 million bigger. In terms of the net present value of the systems that we have under management right now, just so for those listening to understand the business, when we install solar systems, we collect a recurring cash flow stream from the customers for 20 or 30 years, depending on the contract. We incur the cost immediately, and then we recognize the revenue over that 20-year period. So if you look at the NPV of that number as of Q2, the number was just a little over $4 billion. We'll be releasing the number of Q3 on Wednesday, next week Wednesday.
Okay, and the sensitivity to discount rate assumptions?
So that's using a 6% discount rate assumption. If you actually go to our website, and you look at the earnings slide, we do a sensitivity at a 6 and an 8 and at a 4 to give you the different numbers.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm supposed to say we have to be a bit careful because there's an earnings call next week, as Lyndon mentioned. So we don't want to preempt that call. So we can answer things kind of at a broad brushstroke level, but, you know, we can't preempt the earnings call.
Okay. Thanks.
And our next question is from Ben Callow of Baird. Your line is now open.
Hey, Elon, Lyndon. Sorry about the background noise. As you look forward with, capital allocation, how do we think about capital Tesla versus SolarCity? And I asked this a little bit last time, but Panasonic at Buffalo, how do we think about their capital contributions? Thank you.
I don't want to speak for Panasonic, we're pretty optimistic about that. Obviously, we have a great relationship with Panasonic, and discussions with them have gone gone very well. You know, the way things work at Tesla is Panasonic makes the battery cell. There are a bunch of suppliers before that that make anode material, cathode material, separator, electrolyte and whatnot, that we're also working to integrate into the Gigafactory. But then Tesla does everything past the cell level. And we would expect something similar in Buffalo. That's the plan of action. I think most of the capital necessary for that to take place is already there. It's already been, you know, it's been funded. So I think it's pretty small capital requirement going forward to get things going on the cell level. But a little more on the integration into the glass tiles and the overall structure support that on the roof. But we're not really ready to talk. I'm pretty optimistic about how it's going to turn out, but I think it's really transformational. And just sort of a general comment. I mean, it's been incredibly well received on the consumer level. Press has been very positive. There's sort of quite a few naysayers on the financial front, and some of the big hedge funds and whatnot. But I would just say, okay, for those that predict a bad outcome, how good have they been at predicting the outcome for Tesla in the past? And if they have been uniformly, if they have a batting average of zero, you should really question whether their future predictions are going to be better. There's the evidence that's otherwise.
I have one more. My batting average, I think, is better than zero. Versus Chanos. But Panasonic, you have one big partner with two big projects.
It's a little hard to hear you.
You have Panasonic with two big projects. Can you have another big partner? Or how does that affect it that you have Panasonic working on both those things? Thank you.
I'm not sure I understand that question, but I mean, so Panasonic's been a great partner for Tesla for many years, for almost a decade, and things are going really well at the battery Gigafactory. We believe very strongly that the combination of SolarCity's technology on the space front with, added to Panasonic's cell technology, will make it the most efficient and ultimately the cheapest solar cell in the world, just as it is with the battery cell. We have the best cell in the world. That's also the cheapest cell.
And then, this is Jason. Just one thing I'd add on capital needs for the businesses. There's always this trade-off between cash generation and growth. And I think what we demonstrated in our Q3 results is that we're really focused, just on the Tesla side, on strengthening our cash generation and profitability from our current products in order to self-fund the future growth. Our future growth to the largest extent possible. So that's how we're thinking about it.
All right, Donovan, why don't we go to the next question, please?
Our next question is from John Murphy of Bank of America. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon, guys. And I apologize, I'm a simple auto analyst, so I'm going to ask some basic questions maybe here. They might seem kind of basic. I mean, as we think about sort of the asset value on the SolarCity side, as well as the cash flow, I'm just curious, how those things can change, and really kind of from two different angles. I mean, one, as you guys innovate on form factor as well as performance on the solar roofs, which you seem to be doing a great job on, does that impact the existing value of the asset base that's installed? And then second, as houses change hands, how do you, how does the sort of the contract or the payment stream change over to the new owner? I'm just trying to understand recourse and how those cash flows change with that kind of change.
Yeah, this is London. So these are two total separate market segments. The customer who's looking at buying a new roof should absolutely look at a solar roof. customers who have a roof and there's 5-10 years left in that roof, it wouldn't make sense to buy a new roof. There's still a lot of value left in your old roof. So we still see the retrofit market being a very active market for us and continue to grow. Today, we actually don't even address, for the most part, any customer that has a really old roof, because the buying cycle is then they have to get a new roof and solar all at once, and we haven't been able to facilitate that well.
Yeah, it's interesting that this SoulCity actually has a huge database of customers. Sorry for using the word huge. A very large database of customers who were rejected for having solar panels on the roof because their roofs are basically too old and in need of replacement. And it doesn't make sense to put solar panels on a roof that is nearing end of life. So if a typical roof is replaced every 20 years, anything with less than 5 years, even maybe 7 years left on the roof, it's really not going to make economic sense to retrofit solar panels because they're going to need a new roof, and it's, you know, and older is also more susceptible to leaks. And so there's actually a huge database of high value leads for the putting on a solar glass tile roof.
I apologize. Maybe I meant if you installed a solar roof and 2 years later you sell your house and you had a 20-year lease or loan with you guys.
Oh, okay.
Who is then responsible for that, and how does that, of course, work?
Yes. So on the let's just separate the solar roof versus just our standard business. Our standard business, at the size we are right now, we have about 20, 25 people move every day. We have never have we ever prevented a customer from selling their house. New customers like it. They see it as a cheaper source of energy. All the installation is already done, so the transfer rate is extremely high. And that's why we have the good credit underwriting and able to raise long-term financing against this asset there. So transferring is real easy. That happens every single day. With a solar roof, it probably would not fall into a lease or power purchase agreement. It would just be a straightforward loan. And in that case, there's no asset ownership challenge. You just transfer the ownership to the new homeowner. You don't have to think about
you're buying a roof, really. You're buying a roof that happens to generate energy and reduce your utility bill.
Yeah.
But
it's
two transactions then essentially, right, the house and the roof. Right, because you're assuming two loans.
No. This will be. We try to design it as one transaction.
Yeah, I mean,
okay. So
that's the existing mortgage or second mortgage or something like that, and then transfer to the house.
Yeah.
It's just like if you did a kitchen remodel let's say you redid all your appliances to be way more energy efficient, effectively reducing your utility bill. That's an asset that the house has that is transferred with the new owner.
Gotcha. And theoretically, you guys might get paid off at that point. So just to follow up, I mean, on the asset base, the $5.2 billion, I mean, as you innovate, what happens or what is the implication for the value of those assets that you're carrying?
So I mean, I actually see it as a massive upsell opportunity. We have 300,000 customers installed. Towerwall 2 is now out. And, it's actually a very, very simple retrofit procedure for us to go back to the 300,000 customers and upsell them at Powerwall 2. So I actually see that – I'm sorry?
So
I see over time, as we continue to innovate with other energy-related products and as the customer count increases, we're able to derive additional economic value by providing additional energy products to our customers, with Powerwall 2 being the first example of that.
Yeah, I think there's, maybe too much complexity. This is way simpler than it may sound. It's just you made your house better,
mm-hmm.
By say having a solar roof or power wall. It adds the asset value of the house. That's either purchased for cash or loan. Can be provided as a lease. If it's provided as a lease, then somebody could pay that off at the time of selling their house if they want, or transfer it to the new owner.
Okay, and then just lastly, another simple question. I mean, as we look at the sales of all three products together, the roof, a Tesla car, and the Powerwall. I mean, how many of those sort of triple plays do you think you'll be able to sell relative to what you're doing right now? And really, over time, will that be just 100% of your sales?
I don't know about 100% a big number, but I think over time, I think most customers are going to opt for all three. And even if they don't opt for all three all at once, over time, I think they will.
Yeah, I think up front, the solar and storage will be opted in at a very high percentage. Very high percentage.
Yeah, and then
the roof is tied to whether they need a new roof or not.
Right. It's worth noting, like, SolarCity's got 300,000 customers, installed customers. Tesla has around 170, approaching 180,000 customers all in. So there's a pretty significant base to cross-sell product there.
And our next question comes from Vishal Shah of Deutsche Bank. Your line is now open.
Thank you. Good afternoon. This is Rachel for Vishal. We have a question about the revenue synergies and the cash generation. So on the solar side, the existing asset, do you guys think about the existing asset maybe generating additional revenues than the traditional standard sense in terms of, the utility services, solar plus storage, and some additional services and revenue synergies that you guys outlined today?
In that number that we put in the S4, the cash generation from SolarCity, just as a reminder, that was the plan that we created as a standalone. It does not include the synergies and it's just us as a standalone. So with the synergies, that number is conservative and actually will increase.
I do think there are additional products that I'd like to bring out that I think people will find counterintuitive at first, and then find it obvious. this seems to be the pattern. It's counterintuitive, it's stupid, it's never going to work. Okay, now it's obvious. It's like remarkable how that the same people who thought it would never work then think it's obvious. The same people. it's crazy.
And our next question is from Colin Rusch of Oppenheimer. Your line is now open.
Given that you said much of the CapEx was spent in Buffalo, can you walk us through how much total has been spent in Buffalo, how much has been spent by the state of New York, and when you expect delivery on that equipment?
So the state of New York has, I think that's all publicly available information, but they've allocated about $750 million towards the building and the equipment. And the equipment in progress, or a lot of that,
the majority of it should arrive by the end of next year.
Yeah.
So how much has arrived already at this point?
I'd put it at maybe 15-20% or so. I don't know the exact number off by heart. In terms of financial value, I think it's around that number, around 15 or 20%.
And how much of it's been ordered at this point? And would you expect the equipment set to change materially as you start to layer in a new partner into that project?
I don't think that the changes will. I don't think that there are any material changes. The approaches that both Silevo and Panasonic have to two cells are actually the same kind of base cell design, and then there's components of each of the technologies that we're going to take and kind of create a hybrid version of each of them. So we expect all of the equipment to be perfectly applicable to the new cell process.
But it's pretty exciting. I'm highly confident. We'll have the best cell at the lowest price, which is just as we have the best battery cell at the lowest price.
Mm-hmm.
That's there is the highest energy density cell at the lowest price.
And so what do you think that price really is, Elon? You know, if you know, we're selling into the U.S. right now at 40 cents a watt for those modules. I mean, is this, you know, are you guys going to be able to reach 30 or 32 cents a watt, you know, as you start to ramp up at scale?
So I think, so you're talking about 40. So when we look at it, we look at, you know, our cost compared to the price that we could alternatively get it from, and we're comparing your price is kind of commodity solar panels with low efficiency. We think that we can get to that price point of the 40 cents a watt at over time and watt scale.
Yeah.
But with, you know, panel efficiencies in the, you know, 22 or eventually approaching 24%.
That's a very important distinction. Because you have to consider the labor cost of putting the panels down. So low efficiency panels require a lot more labor, a lot more other material in order to get the same power output. So if you have a 15% panel or 16% panel compared to, say, a 20, 22 or 23% panel, it means you need 50% more area. So all the other balance of system stuff gets, and labor, transport, logistics, needs to be weighed into the cost per watt.
Yeah, and
it's a very significant factor.
Yeah, I mean, just like conservatively, the direct cost reductions for high efficiency panels are estimated around 15 cents a watt in terms of labor, mounting hardware, and so on. But also, there's, you know, like you got to think about the differentiation in the eyes of the customer as well. You know, if we have a superior product, they will always pick us. So the differentiation, I think, makes a difference as well.
Exactly. You don't want to compete just on price alone. That is not a good. That does not make for a good business.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to put some metrics around it, and so I guess maybe we can revisit it on the Solar City call, given that we're short time today. Thanks so much, guys.
All right.
And our next question is from Brian Johnson with Barclays. Your line is now open.
Yes, good afternoon. Have a couple questions on the debt side of the combined company, and understanding, of course, we'll see more when Solar City is worth. So the first, if we think about your statement that the recurring cash flows exceed non-recourse debt by $2 billion at the end, 6% discount rate, how much of that $2 billion is from the renewal assumptions for after year 20, which seems to have a gross value of $4.8
billion? So looking at two numbers, your contracted number is $3.1 billion, and then your uncontracted number is $900 million, so total of $4 billion. And then your debt on that is 1.8, which leaves you 2.2.
Okay, so it'd be about $1.1 billion excluding the renewals. I guess second, related to that, you know, given what you've shown with the solar roof, how do you think that's going to affect the renewal rate on the Solar City panel leases? I know it's 20 years out, but since we are dealing with NPVs going out 30 years,
so the, you know, it's a high probability that many of our customers actually may need to replace the roof within that 20-year period. That happened today. We just removed the panels. We just put it back on. Remember, the panels are essentially paid for by the customer.
Yeah, they could be repurposed too.
They could be repurposed. But we do expect that, depending on the customer's roof, that a healthy percentage renew.
Okay, and third question.
It should be clear, like, it's going to take a long time to really deploy solar roofs at scale. But ultimately, there's, you know, somewhere in the order of 70, 80 million residential, take North America, including Canada and Mexico. Man, it's a big number, maybe 150 million, something like that, roofs. Just the sheer scale of that is mind-boggling. And that's just North America.
Yeah, I'm just getting at some of these customers. If it does take a while, but if solar roof is successful when the renewals come up in 20 years, that may be a better option for the customer than leaving the panels on a aging, leaking roof.
It certainly will be for some number of customers, but then we will take the panels and put them on, say, a commercial installation or put them on some other customer's roof. So essentially, you have a trade-in value of your roof.
Hey,
it's not zero. Like, the first panel is still working fine.
A really key point to understand is that it generates electricity. So there's real value in those panels.
Yeah, but even if somebody says they want to go to, solar glass roof, we just take the panels and the electrical equipment supporting the old style panels and reuse them on other houses. It'll take a long time before everyone they want to do a solar roof. It's not going to be, not be everyone. And then the panels are still going to make sense for any kind of flat roof installation where you don't have where things aren't visible. So an in-house commercial installation where it's on a flat rooftop or a residential situation where it's flat rooftop, there's really no point in having something that's beautiful from an aesthetic standpoint if nobody can see it.
And final question related to debt. SolarCity has converts. My reading of those, which may be wrong, is they're payable in cash given where the stock price is and where the conversion comes out to. A, is that right? B, will you downstream cash? C, can you actually convert that to settle with additional shares? And just how should we think about from the Tesla level, the refinancing that SolarCity? And actually, as part of that, can you confirm that it's going to be a D-sub and that Tesla is not going to be guaranteeing the debt of the new SolarCity sub post-acquisition?
SolarCity would certainly honor any of the debt obligation, of course. I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, I guess one, technically, is the plan to keep SolarCity as a bankruptcy remote subsidiary of Tesla as your current ABL seems to indicate?
No.
Two, what's that?
This would be one company. But I think there's really, I see zero chance of SolarCity going bankrupt. Zero.
Right. So then will Tesla downstream money to pay to refinance, or will SolarCity be out refinancing the converts on its own?
It's going to be one company. So.
And just to address the actual payment of that convert, so remember this is in 2 years' time. The company generates roughly $200 million a quarter of NPV, or future value. We've now proven that we can monetize those cash flows. We've over the last 120 days, we raised cash equity. We did
a securitization deal.
Securitization or selling the financing, the future cash flows, either through debt or through an equity investor coming in and buying these cash flows.
Yeah. I just there's like a lot of confusion between securitization or selling off of cash flows of product and general corporate debt.
Yeah, so none of this is corporate debt.
Right.
That's why I was focused on the convert, which is corporate debt.
Solar bonds are a bit apart from that.
Solar bonds, but when I'm talking about the...
Four pieces of the puzzle.
When I'm talking about the $4 billion, and then we're talking about the 1.8, that's not corporate debt, that's asset financing, just to be real clear on that. And
yeah, it's non-recourse asset financing. So it's just, yeah.
And so when if you're looking at the run rate of the company, and you look at the net present value that we generate every single quarter, it's roughly $200 million. And so just maintaining that run rate, we'll be able to monetize enough cash flows to essentially cover the converts.
Okay, so that's the plan.
Yeah, and this is Jason. Just to add one more point on top of that. So SolarCity has 2018 converts. We also have 2018 converts. And our original issuance on our converts is $660 million. We've actually paid down more than $450 million of that convert. So we've done that in the last 90 days. So we've significantly de-risked 2018 and the capital structure moves that we've made over the last quarter.
Okay, thanks.
All right, everyone, we are at the 30-minute mark here. Do you want to take a couple more questions?
Just do a few more.
Okay. All right. Donovan, let's take the next question.
Okay, our next question is from Charlie Anderson with Doherty & Company. Your line is now open.
Thanks for taking my question. One of the comments in the blog post on revenue synergies was that, quote, customers have overlapping product interests. I wonder if you have any statistics to back that up, you know, whether it be Model 3 reservation holders overlap with maybe the SolarCity pipeline. Anything there would be helpful. Thanks.
We've not surveyed our customers on this, so it's somewhat speculative. But I don't know, Lynn, if you have any idea on that.
Hey, I think the overlap on the Model 3 will be quite dramatic. The S and X, I think there is a fair amount of overlap there, but probably not as much as you'll see in the Model 3.
And then as a follow-up, I wondered, you know, Elon, I wonder if you could maybe compare and contrast the outlook for Tesla Energy with and without SolarCity, considering there's probably two very different outcomes there potentially from your perspective.
I mean, as I expressed before, I'm pretty optimistic about where the vote's going. You know, the early votes so far have been overwhelmingly in favor. We find it quite strange if that doesn't turn out to be the case. But, you know, we would just have a more clunky product offering where, you know, we'd be selling batteries and then try sort of, SolarCity would be selling solar systems. They wouldn't be well integrated. They wouldn't be sold as a package. We really wouldn't have a good basis for favoring SolarCity, because would that be a separate company? So it'd be kind of forced into an arm's length situation.
It actually makes it harder.
It's very difficult. We went through this earlier this year with Hawaii utility deal, where it's a combined solar battery system, and it runs through the independent directors of both boards. It has to go through this long process of approval, verifying it's an arm's length transaction, slow down the whole thing. There's no way we can scale that. Like, we're going to do over time hundreds of utility level solar battery installations. We want this to be a seamlessly integrated system, both the utility level, commercial level, at the consumer level, and it's just very unwieldy to do so as two separate companies.
Thanks so much.
And our next question is from Joseph Speck with RBC Capital Markets. Your line is now open.
Thanks. Just a quick clarification on Rod's first question. I didn't quite catch it. On the $500 million, is that going to include the cash that will be on hand at the close of the deal?
No, that's new generation of cash, yeah.
Okay, thanks. And then to follow up on the last point, if for some reason the deal didn't go through, would you look to set up a partnership or a joint venture to sell, you know, the solar storage combination, or potentially even look for multiple partnerships?
I don't think we can really do a joint venture. I kind of hate joint ventures. I think they rarely work. And I'm not sure we have a good basis for doing so, unless we're one company. I mean, jointly. So it would be, I guess, working with kind of a heterogeneous set of companies, and it would be a worse product, worse experience for the end user.
Yeah, it'd be strange. End user goes to Tesla store, sees SolarCity or whoever it is, it's out there.
We don't have some smorgasbord of solar offerings in our stores. It's weird.
It'd be strange. Yeah.
You know, would you go into an Apple store and see like six different cell phones getting sold? It'd be, you know, but no.
And our next question is from Julian Dumoulin-Smith, the UBS. Your line is now open.
Hey, it's Julian here. Good afternoon. So, question, can you comment real quickly around the remaining obligations to New York in terms of the $5 billion of the 10 years? Just comment, is that something that would be contemplated as being kept at the SolarCity Tesla level under any Panasonic deal, or is that something that was negotiated as part of the Panasonic offtake? How do you think about that?
So just to be clear, those are basically the cumulative COGS of what would be the Tesla, SolarCity, and Panasonic partnership combination. And it also includes the operations that SolarCity currently has in New York. So we actually think that, you know, our total COGS will be in excess of that number over the 10-year period. And none of these relationships are really going to kind of affect it one way or another.
So just make sure I heard you right. So you're still confident you can hit that number. It still remains with the company, but even pro forma for any deal that you guys engage with Panasonic, you still feel comfortable?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, great. Excellent. Thank you.
Sure.
And our next question is from Philip Shin with Roth Capital Partners. Your line is now open.
All right, let's take maybe one last question here.
Thanks for squeezing me in here. Why did key members of the Silevo team leave so soon after the acquisition and ahead of the commercial ramp-up?
There was one member of the Silevo team, and I think we were just, to be honest, scattered in a different direction. We still maintain a good relationship with him, but, for a variety of different reasons, we were just kind of wanted to take it in a different direction. But it has nothing to do with our plans, with our planned ramp necessarily.
I think you addressed this earlier, but do you continue to plan to move forward with the Silevo process, or do you expect to find, I think you mentioned a hybrid cell that's possible between Silevo and HIT, the HIT cell that Panasonic produces? And if that is the case, that you plan on making them a hybrid, at a high level, can you explain how that will happen?
Sure. So we're basically going to bring the best learnings from both of the teams. So I'll give you an example. So Silevo has kind of perfected a heterojunction cell on a using a 6-inch wafer, okay? And Panasonic is yet to transition to a 6-inch wafer. So we'll kind of take Silevo's learnings on 6-inch and apply that to the learnings that Panasonic has kind of achieved over the years, scaling heterojunction cells to gigawatts and beyond.
Okay, great. And as it relates to the solar roof, you know, a number of companies have tried to pursue solar shingles over the past, you know, number of years, Dow, Energy Conversion Devices, et cetera, and they've all, you know, kind of come and gone. What are you doing fundamentally that is different, and what are your cost targets for the solar shingles? And what is the timing of those cost targets?
Dude, you just threw in three questions there after I said that was the last one.
Thanks, Elon. We definitely appreciate it, and I know there are lots of people, you know, interested in the answers to these questions, so definitely appreciate it.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I've never seen a solar roof that I would actually want. Have you? Even one? I haven't.
Yeah, I mean, look at the Dow ones, all those ones. They just, you can aesthetically, they look.
They're weird. I mean, they're worse than a normal roof. Every one of them that I've seen is worse than a normal roof, without exception. Unless you're going to beat a normal roof on aesthetics, why bother? So none of them did that. The attention to detail. The aesthetics, the integration of the cell with the right type of glass, it's just always been done poorly. I just don't know a single case where it's been done well. I've been really quite keen on doing that for a while. Like, I mean, I have solar panels on my roof, but they're kind of in an area which is hard to see. My roof is a French state roof, so it's one of the one of the tile styles I want to do is, like, could we make a French slate, a roof that looks like French slate that I could replace my entire roof with, and it would be aesthetically better. And we were able to get that. It was super hard. And with the manufacturing process, they were confident it's going to be very low cost. Which is like it's basically high volume glass. I mean, it is using a lot of techniques from the automotive glass business. And in case it wasn't obvious with the announcement, Tesla has created a glass technology group. So, which with some really phenomenal people, we'll start to see the first elements of that on Model 3. It's just that glass is not expensive. It's actually, in volume, glass is very cheap and very resilient. And then applying kind of the hydrographic, it's not exactly painting, but a hydrographic coloring, also, fundamentally an inexpensive process. Using the micro louvers to provide earth tone colors. They're very low cost and volume. Like, none of these things are fundamentally expensive. I don't know why nobody's done this before. Blows my mind.
The other area why the others have failed, ignore the aesthetics, just to say it was beautiful. The distribution process is another reason why I don't think it succeeded. They went about creating the product, going through distributors, who then sell to the installer, who then has to get installed. So you have multiple people in the value chain who each add a compounding margin, and then the end product was just too expensive.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's just ended up being overhead and profit to the power.
Yes.
With a lot of inefficiency in this distribution chain. If you look at the fundamental cost, say, what's the cost? I mean, just look at ground-up analysis, like, what's the cost of glass, cost per pound, cost per kilogram of glass, including high-strength glass. It's incredibly low. It's basically, it's processed sand. How much would it cost to do hydrographic printing and volume? Also very low. Cost to reduce microlouver film in volume? Very low. It's basically plastic. Very durable plastic. The tiles need to snap into a back-end skeleton structure, just like snapping in a light bulb. It's really simple. It's like, if you ask me why hasn't somebody done this, I don't know. I wish they had, and if they had, we wouldn't bother. But for some bizarre reason, they're not.
All right. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you for joining us today, and we look forward to chatting with you in the future.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's conference. This does conclude the program, and you may all disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.